The last time Mike Glenn saw the sun was November of 2007. In under 3 years, he went from needing glasses to complete vision loss. This hour, conditions that can lead to adult onset blindness. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, what it's like to go blind. I'll talk with Mike Glenn, who lost his vision to diabetic retinopathy, and Archie Roden, who has gradually been losing his sight to macular degeneration. I'll talk with ophthalmologist Dr. Jane Bailey about the different conditions that can cause vision loss and how they can be treated. And we'll get an overview of some of the services available to people who are vision impaired. Join the conversation after the news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care including independent living, assisted living, skilled, and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Imagine living with the knowledge that you will someday lose the ability to see. That's a reality for many Iowans who are dealing with a variety of conditions. This hour, we'll talk about the conditions that can lead to blindness, possible treatments for those conditions, and the resources available to Iowans with impaired vision. But first, Archie Roden has lived for many years with the knowledge that his vision would get worse, significantly worse. He's 91 years old now, but he was first diagnosed with macular degeneration 30 years ago. Archie, thank you so much for being on the show.
You're very welcome.
And I want to go back in time 30 years ago when you first got that diagnosis. What were you experiencing that led you to go to the doctor?
Well, in those days, I was still working and was having a little issue with reading, the little double vision or something in the mornings. And we got new lenses every year with our insurance. So I thought, well, I'll get these new lenses and that'll fix everything. And it didn't change it. And I finally went to a really good ophthalmologist. He took pictures of my eyes, internal of the eyes, and he said, you have macular degeneration. And they found whatever it is that they find in there that hinted to that. And I was able to keep on going. I retired, and then for a number of years, I traveled, I drove the car, and everything was fine. And then about 2004, I had trouble reading, and I got magnifiers, and the VA came in the picture and got me a big CCTV, closed circuit TV, so I could read.
So back when you got that diagnosis and you were told that your eyesight would get gradually worse to the point where you would be legally blind, how did you cope with that news?
Well, it was so gradual, and I remember it's been over 12 years ago. I was driving my car, and if there was a shadow on the street from a tree during, you know, on a sunny day, I couldn't see a thing in there, and it scared me. So the next time I applied for a license, they wouldn't issue one. So, and I was really happy for that part of it.
You were relieved. I mean, I'm sure that must have been difficult, too.
Well, it was. And I just lost so much freedom then because I couldn't drive. But my wife drives, and I have friends that drive me around, and grateful for that.
What is your vision like now?
The last I had a central vision, you see, and I was 20/200 in one eye and 20/400 in the other. And but I have good peripheral vision. I'm really fortunate because I like to walk, and I do a lot of walking, I wouldn't be able to do that if I didn't have peripheral vision.
So you basically can't see anything straight ahead, but you can get a sense of your surroundings.
Well, I can see faces, but they're blurred until I get real close. And for print, if I magnify it, I currently have to magnify it about 6 to 7 times, then I can read it. So it's a wonderful thing in that respect, anyway.
Right, yeah.
So I'm limited in a lot of ways, but not everything.
What do you think has been the most helpful to you? You talked about some of the resources that you had available to you. What do you think's helped you the most?
Well, I think in the beginning, knowing about the Iowa Department of the Blind, I got books on tape then, and that was a big help. That was the beginning, and then as I needed more magnification, it was available. The Iowa Department, I got a lens that magnified 3 times there. And then when I got with the VA, I could magnify it up to 50 times. But so far, I'm only about 6.
But to have that power so that you'll be able to continue to see that.
And they also have a software for my computer so I can read it, too.
Well, Archie, thank you so much for talking with me today.
You're very welcome.
Archie Roden of Des Moines. He's been living with macular degeneration for 30 years. In this hour, we're talking about some of the conditions that can lead to adult onset vision loss. And with me now is Dr. Jane Bailey. She's an ophthalmologist at the University of Iowa. Dr. Bailey, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And we just heard Archie talking about macular degeneration, and he mentioned there are 2 different types of macular degeneration, and this is one of the big conditions that can lead to vision loss later in life, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, macular degeneration becomes much more common as we get older. And there are probably about 3 million older people who have macular degeneration. Fortunately, 90% of them have good vision and they're functional, and it doesn't affect them too much. But about 1 in 10 will develop a more severe form of the disease, and sometimes that's the exudative or wet kind. And there are treatments for that, so it's important to get a comprehensive eye exam. But it can be a very difficult disease to live with because it affects the central part of your vision. The macula is what we call the retina that does the bulk of the seeing for sharp vision. It's the part you use to read and to see faces, as Archie was describing. So it leaves kind of a hole in your vision and can make it very difficult to read and drive and things like that. Fortunately, with macular degeneration, your side vision is always preserved. And so that lets you have a lot of mobility. And if you can have help with certain central vision tasks, you can often maintain your independence and functionality that way.
Well, you mentioned treatment. What can be done if somebody is suffering from macular degeneration?
Well, it's a good question. If it's what we call the dry kind, which is, 9 out of 10 people, there really isn't any treatment, but we do know that there are ways to help prevent the disease from progressing to vision loss or slow down the progression of the disease. One way is to use antioxidant supplements that have been shown to be beneficial, and that's an over-the-counter concoction of vitamin E and vitamin C and a few other things. And that's called AREDS2. It's also really important for people with macular degeneration to maintain a healthy lifestyle because some of the cause of macular degeneration is genetic, but a lot of it is lifestyle related. And so maintaining a healthy, active lifestyle and also eating healthy foods, including vegetables and fruits and dark leafy greens. Also protecting yourself from UV exposure because UV exposure can play a role. And so wearing sunglasses and a hat is helpful. So those are ways to prevent it. If you have macular degeneration and you don't want to lose vision from it, obviously you can't do anything about your genes. Now, if you have the more severe kind, the wet kind, as Archie was describing, There are injections of medication that can help these abnormal blood vessels regress. And those have to be repeated at certain intervals. And it sounds terrible, but it's surprisingly well tolerated by patients. And that can slow down and sometimes improve the vision for a number of years.
There are many different conditions that can lead to vision loss. I want to kind of touch on the big four, the main conditions, and we'll talk about them throughout the hour, too. But another one is glaucoma. Tell me how common glaucoma is.
Well, glaucoma also affects probably about 3 million adults and also becomes more common as you get older. Glaucoma is where the pressure in the eye causes damage to the optic nerve. And the optic nerve is sort of like the cable that brings the vision from the eye to the brain, and it plugs into the back of the eye. It has about 1 million nerve fibers in it. You can lose a few of those nerve fibers. Luckily, our visual system is a little redundant. But if you lose too many, you start losing vision. And you start losing it in a pattern that's kind of tricky. It's very slow and gradual, and it might be out in the peripheral part of your vision, and it might be the part that overlaps your nose. So it's not going to be something you're going to notice until it's pretty advanced. The other tricky thing is that the pressure isn't something you can feel, and the pressure is unrelated to your blood pressure. It's only something that we can detect when you come into the office for a complete exam. And if you have a family history, you're more at risk for glaucoma. People who are African American are more at risk for glaucoma and vision loss from that. But it's a very treatable disease. So it's something that once you get into your 50s and 60s, you really should be having eye exams to check for that.
Even if you don't necessarily need glasses?
Absolutely.
And being very treatable, what does that mean? If it's caught early, it's very treatable. How do you treat it?
Yes. So once you lose vision from glaucoma, there's really nothing we can do to get it back. But if we catch it before it's affected your vision, we can usually prevent you from losing vision. And the first line of treatment is usually eye drops. We have a great, you know, simple eye drop that's once a day at bedtime that's generic. And a lot of people do very well just with that. And there are other medications. There are laser treatments. There are incisional surgery. So there's a lot of treatment options. But the people who really get into trouble with glaucoma are people who don't know that they have it.
And we'll talk more about how this kind of science, this kind of medical science has advanced because so many of these conditions are so much more treatable than they used to be. Cataract is definitely one of those conditions where there are so many more options for people now, right?
Oh, cataract surgery has gotten so much better over the past 20 years. And, you know, as the population ages and people are really more sort of demanding about their visual function. They don't tolerate, you know, having a lot of blurry vision. You know, cataract surgery is very common. There's probably 24 million people with cataracts. Cataracts are kind of like gray hair. You know, the lens in your eye gets thicker as you get older. Your body makes lens proteins and they build up sort of like the rings of a tree. And that kind of blurs the vision. And cataract surgery, it might take 20 or 30 minutes. The incision has gotten so tiny, and that's made it safer and easier to recover from. The incision's often now about a tenth of an inch.
That's amazing. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking to Dr. Jane Bailey. She's an ophthalmologist at the University of Iowa. We're talking about vision loss this hour and some of the conditions that can cause vision loss. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care including independent living, assisted living, skilled, and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the conditions that can lead to adult-onset vision loss or severe impairment, treatment for these conditions, services available for the blind in Iowa. We'll talk about those in a few minutes, and also the experience of living with one of these conditions. With me right now, Dr. Jane Bailey. She's an ophthalmologist at the University of Iowa, and we were talking about kind of the big four conditions that can lead to this kind of vision loss: macular degeneration, we talked about glaucoma, and we started talking about cataracts, which is something that used to really doom you to a later life filled with blurry vision, but it is something that has gotten so much more treatable. With cataracts, is this a situation where people need to catch it early as well, or is that not as important?
Well, cataracts different from the other conditions that we've talked about in that it's not so important what we see on our exam. It's really how well you see and you function. And there are some people who really can't tolerate, you know, glare at night if you're a truck driver or something like that. And they would choose to have cataract surgery very early in the course of their cataract and have good distance vision after surgery. But there are other people who have bilateral, you know, symmetric cataracts and just a little blurring or glare, and it's a very gradual change, and they might tolerate that for a long time. And so years ago, it used to be that the doctor would say, it's ripe and it's got to come out, or it's not ripe and you have to wait. And that was when we were making a very large incision in the eye and taking the lens out all in one piece, and it was a pretty dangerous procedure, and the lens had to be hard. And now we use little ultrasonic vibrations and microscopic instruments and that tiny incision that I was talking about. And so the only thing that matters is how well you're seeing and functioning. Now, there are conditions, for instance, if you do have diabetes or diabetic retinopathy, and if we can't see in because of your cataract, then we would say, you know, it's really time. Or if you're seeing so poorly that you wouldn't pass the driver's test, then we might say, you know, it's time to think about, you know, improving your vision with cataracts.
Absolutely. Well, and you mentioned diabetic retinopathy. What is that?
Well, diabetes can cause damage to the small blood vessels throughout your body, and particularly in the retina, we're concerned about these small caliber vessels. And when the blood sugar damages the wall of the blood vessel, it gets a little balloon on it, a little weak area, and that area can start to leak or bleed. And the retina is very thin nerve tissue that lines the back of the eye, and it damages the retina to have fluid or blood or cholesterol, you know, sitting in the retina. And if we catch those changes early, those little microaneurysms or that leakage or other damage to the blood vessels, then we can treat that, and that can prevent vision loss. On the other hand, if those areas are damaged and they leak and the fluid sits there for months or years and the retina deteriorates, then there's really nothing that can be done to improve the vision. So that's a disease where it's very important to get regular eye exams. It's also important to manage, you know, lifestyle as much as possible to try to control the blood sugars and the blood pressure and the cholesterol, and again, you know, have an active lifestyle and a healthy diet. And I think doctors are trying now to prevent people from becoming diabetic as much as possible.
Well, I want to bring someone else into the conversation now. Mike Glenn lives in Des Moines, and he lost his vision to diabetic retinopathy. Hello, Mike.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today. And I know this didn't happen all that long ago. Tell me when you first started realizing there was something affecting your vision.
Well, in the summer of 2005, I was working as a nurse at Broadlawns, and I noticed that I was having some vision changes, so I thought it was just time to get new glasses. I went to purchase some new glasses, and during the exam, I was told that I should go to an ophthalmologist because what they saw was fairly significant, which I did do, and I was diagnosed with diabetic retinopathy and also some glaucoma at that time. So from that point on, I went to try to save and reverse the process, but unfortunately it advanced too much to the point that I was diagnosed as legally blind in October of 06, and by November of 07, that was the last time I saw the sun.
Wow. So you now have complete vision loss.
Correct.
As you were going through that transition, what were some of the biggest challenges for you to deal with? I mean, that's an incredible change in your life.
Well, surprisingly, I guess at the time, I wasn't thinking about it that much because I had gone and hooked up with the Iowa Department for the Blind. They have an adult orientation and rehab center, an inpatient facility, to teach alternative means of doing what you want to do due to blindness. And I had also, I'm a veteran, and I had also hooked up with the VA with our VIS coordinator, Visual Impairment Services Coordinator. At the time, her name was Bonnie Whitson. So I was able to get the kinds of services through the department to help me realize that I could still do essentially whatever I wanted to. So I thought, well, I can just go ahead and continue on. But unfortunately, it was a little bit more than I anticipated. But still, at the same time, I thought, well, I want to remain as independent as possible. I'm going to learn how to do these things. I was able to go to a place called Hines VA that has a blind rehab center. And I also learned some alternative methods of doing things. So it never really bothered me, I guess you could say, that I had lost my vision. I just took it in stride, saying, okay, this is what it is. There isn't anything I can do about it now. There's no sense in crying about it. Let's just keep moving on.
I know that you walk with a cane now in order to get around. What was the most difficult thing to adjust to, or technology or service to learn to take advantage of?
There, between the department and what I learned at the VA, both of those emphasize that you know pretty much everything that you need to know. It's just being shown different ways of using what you have. So in other words, walking down the street, it may seem like a very daunting task, but if you're an older person, you've done this probably a million times. So by using your cane, when I'm walking down the street, all right, I feel grass on my right side, grass on my left side, and I'm on a hard surface. So that means I'm still on the sidewalk moving forward. Now, if I come to a large open area such as a parking lot, then yeah, that does become more of a challenge because I don't have those borders to orientate me. But that's how you learn how to use your sense of feel. In other words, is the sun still on my right side or my left side? You listen. All right, the cars are still on my side or now they in front, which means I've turned. So there are a lot of ways to still help you to maintain your direction when traveling.
It sounds like you really have made great adjustments and taken this all in stride. Has it changed how people treat you?
Yes, it has. That's probably one of the biggest problems or obstacles is the attitude of society toward blindness, because people will see a blind person and immediately feel sorry and think that they need to come and help me. Now, if I ask for assistance, that's great. But when someone comes up and immediately grabs my arm or my shoulder and says, here, this way, I don't know who they are. So it's a little bit disconcerting to me. They don't know what I want to do. I've had people, as I'm standing waiting in an elevator, the door opens and they want to grab my elbow and take me into the elevator, not asking if I'm going up or down.
So well-meaning people, but not approaching you as they would any normal person.
Yeah. The best thing to do is just say, may I help you? That acknowledges me as a person, and it gives me the right to say, no, thank you, I've got it, or yes, am I still headed toward 38th Street? How much farther? Half a block, quarter of a block, couple of steps, that type of thing.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
Thank you.
Mike Glenn lives in Des Moines. He lost his vision to diabetic retinopathy. You're welcome to share your thoughts this hour as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Still with me is Dr. Jane Bailey, an ophthalmologist at the University of Iowa. And I want to bring Kim Barber into the conversation as well now. She's an independent living program administrator at the Iowa Department for the Blind. Hello, Kim.
Hello. Thank you for the invitation.
Well, thank you so much for being here today and listening to Mike talk about the services he was able to take advantage of with the Iowa Department for the Blind. You clearly help a lot of people make this transition, and I can imagine there are just so many challenges as an adult to transitioning to living in a completely different way.
Well, yes, the Iowa Department for the Blind exists to empower Iowans, blind Iowans, to fully participate in employment and independent living. And what Mike shared with us today was actually very profound. We do know and we do serve Iowans who are blind that represent a large cross-section of Iowa's population. You know, we have folks who are retired farmers, bankers, executives, computer programmers, and many, many retirees who are now losing their vision due to macular degeneration, glaucoma, complications of diabetes, and that sort of thing. We know from Dr. Kenneth Dernigan, who came to us in 1958, when I say come to us at the Iowa Department for the Blind, he was our administrator. Through his efforts, he taught us that when individuals become blind, the individual actually faces two major problems. And the first of those problems is learning the skills and the techniques which will enable the individual to carry on with a normal, productive life in their community. And then the second is that the person must become aware of and learn to cope with the public attitudes and misconceptions, as Mike earlier alluded to, about blindness. The first of the problems, of course, is the easiest to solve when we're talking about training skills. That's the easy piece, but we do know for a fact that with the proper training and opportunity, that an average person who is blind doing an average job in the average place of the business can do just as well as his or her sighted peer. The bottom line is that the real problem of blindness itself is not the blindness, and it's not the acquisition of the skills or techniques, but the real problem is the lack of understanding and the misperceptions of the general public, of agencies, and really of blind people themselves who have created the problem and who must accept that responsibility for solving that problem.
Well, Mike was relatively young when he lost his sight, and of course, with a lot of the conditions that we're talking about, we've mentioned 50 years old, which is actually not very old when people are going through this kind of transition. How do you help people as far as vocational rehabilitation? Mike talked a lot about learning how to live independently as a blind man, but of course, a lot of people have a lot of their working life left as well. How do you help people learn how to do their jobs or do a job as a blind person?
Right. Well, we also have lots of folks, in fact, who are coming out of retirement because of necessity or because they just want something to do with their time. And we have great programs at the Iowa Department for the Blind. The Vocational Rehabilitation Program is one that will address anyone who's blind or has low vision in preparing or obtaining or if they're in a job retaining their employment, everybody or anybody here in Iowa who has a problem with low vision or who is blind, all they need to do is pick up the phone and call us and make an application to our program. And we do send qualified counselors and teachers out to make a visit and finish the application and determine eligibility. Once we know a person is eligible for vocational or independent living program, we start that process with them of engaging them in training activities and instruction.
Now, you believe that it's important for people to learn Braille. With so much technology available to us now, in some ways that seems less necessary than it used to be. Why do you think it's important?
Yeah. Well, you know, Braille is all about literacy, and I am a firm believer that just like you and I, who, and I'm presuming you're sighted, I am, that we often have to pick up our pen and paper, especially when our computers break down or crash or whatever, we need to still be able to take notes and communicate. There's lots of good ways that Braille is used. Also, a lot of our individuals who are over the age of 55 and retired, most average in our independent living program, in their 70s, 80s, and some in 90s, they're wanting to learn Braille so that they can label things, like label some of their canned goods or label other things that they may have in storage. And so they're learning and using Braille for that purpose.
Interesting.
But it's basic literacy. I mean, it's all about literacy. And particularly with our younger, with our children, I think, I guess my question is why wouldn't we teach them how to use Braille? Certainly.
Kim, we are out of time, but thank you so much for talking with me today.
Okay, thank you.
Kim Barber, Independent Living Program Administrator at the Iowa Department for the Blind. We'll continue our conversation in a moment, talking about some of the conditions that lead to adult onset vision loss and some of the services available for people with vision loss in Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about some of the conditions that can lead to vision loss, treatment for those conditions, and also how people make that transition. If someone has lived as a sighted person their entire life and then are dealing with vision loss, that can be a very difficult transition to make. With me, Dr. Jane Bailey. She is an ophthalmologist at the University of Iowa. And let's dig a little bit deeper into some of the services available. I want to bring Keith Queen into the conversation. He is with the Iowa City VA, Visual Impairment Services Team Coordinator there. Hello, Keith.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today. And I know that you yourself have dealt with vision problems pretty much all of your life. Tell me a little bit about your personal experience.
Grew up in Detroit, and I inherited a disease called Stargardt's, which is a juvenile onset macular dystrophy, and it functionally it's similar to a person with advanced macular degeneration. My central vision is gone. It affects the fovea of the macula, and so visually I can count fingers eccentrically, meaning off center at about a foot. So my I hold two undergraduate degrees, a master's degree. I was in the Peace Corps in the Fiji Islands for 2 years, and I have been doing this job for 17 years at Atlanta, Connecticut, Minneapolis, Birmingham, Alabama, and I worked in financial services as a securities advisor for a number of years as well, so it hasn't stop me.
Right. It hasn't stood in your way, although it is part of what led you to doing this kind of work. How many visually impaired veterans do you work with in Iowa City?
We have 344 on the caseload right now, 200 that are legally blind, and the remaining veterans with a severe disabling visual conditions.
And actually, both of the men that we talked to today have gotten services through the VA as they've been dealing with their different conditions. Although, I'm sure that you work not just with people who have these conditions, but also with people who've lost their vision due to accident or injury. How is that different in helping somebody make a transition?
Yeah, initially, when years ago, there was a lot more, and we still have veterans that are coming off the battlefield with severe vision loss or blindness, and the ability to get to them quickly and provide that what Kim Barber was speaking about, not only the skill acquisition, but then the counseling and the support psychologically. Is phenomenal with the VA, but it really boils down to getting them in and getting those skills set up and realizing that there's life beyond that vision loss.
What can the VA offer when someone is dealing with one of these conditions where they're dealing with gradual vision loss and making a transition in their lives?
The VA has a very comprehensive continuum of care that goes anywhere from the home, actually, and that varies from center of VA, from state to state, or inside each facility. The Eyes of This coordinator provide a lot of services, which I can go into, but then I send a lot of veterans, actually, over to Des Moines, because Des Moines has an advanced low vision program. Dr. Meeks and his staff there are extraordinary. They have a two-day HOPTEL program, and they go into a very comprehensive low vision exam to work on preferred gaze and how to optimize what sight they have. And then Wes, who is my counterpart there, and Kate Johnson, they're both certified in different aspects of blindness, certified orientation mobility, certified low vision, vision rehab therapist. And then they also include the family on a two-day program there to get them some fundamental skill sets going with some of these low vision devices. We also then, when you heard Archie, but for sure Mike, brought up Hines. We have 14 centers around the country, including Puerto Rico, that we can send a veteran to that is an inpatient comprehensive blind rehab training program. Hines has been operating since the late 40s when the World War II vets came back and were able to acquire funds through Congress to start these training processes. Back in those days, it was more vocationally oriented, or a lot of the training was vocational. In a sense, you got young blinded vets out of World War II in an industrial society. But nowadays, with the onset of the macular degeneration and aging population and so forth, that is still a supportive mechanism. But it, in addition to low vision, we have computer training. They have shops that would be comparable to a comprehensive vocational shop in a high school, like metal, woodworking, plumbing, electric. So part of the idea is a veteran. I've had veterans who refuse to go because they say, I'm not going up to Hines, I'm not going to Chicago, blah, blah. And then they find out, oh, you mean I could go up there and learn how to take apart and reassemble my Briggs & Stratton lawnmower engine so I can do this myself? I said, yeah, they can do that. And sightless. And they said, I'm in, send me.
Nice, nice.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's
so just learning the possibilities. I can imagine that one of the biggest challenges would be keeping people active, and because I'm sure that if you learn that you are losing your vision, there must be a moment where you think I'm not going to be able to do anything.
Spot on, absolutely. When they can't read the newspaper, see faces anymore, and drive, then that response can become sedentary. And the goal is whatever, you know, thing that we can find that might tweak their interest to keep active, and whether it's adaptive sports or fishing, we've got veterans who volunteer in local food pantries, whatever. And then with the advent of some extremely high-tech and simple-to-use devices, it's amazing. So, and just like talking to Kim, anywhere from Braille to the iPhone, they're all tools.
Right.
And but I'll give you an example with the cane, if we can. Mike, learning how to use the cane up there. You could take a totally blind veteran that you would have to guide into his bedroom or her bedroom day one, and orient from the bedroom to the bathroom to a dresser, and then eventually to the nurse's station and then to their classes, within a 15 or 16-week program, they would be riding the train and the buses in Chicago to go shopping or out to eat independently.
Oh, that's terrific. Keith, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Keith Queen, the Iowa City VA Visual Impairment Services Team Coordinator. And Keith talked about reading the newspaper, which is something that a lot of people with vision loss miss out on. It's an important part of our community life. And Mary Frances Evans is here. She is Executive Director of the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service, more commonly known as IRIS. And she helps people with vision impairment stay connected to their community through their local newspaper, among other things. Hello, Mary Frances.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here.
It's pretty exciting.
And give me a very brief overview of what IRIS offers to people in Iowa.
Well, every single day of the year, in seven locations, including this building right here in Iowa City, volunteer teams come in, sit down in front of an IRIS microphone, and read their local newspaper out loud. We have nine local newspapers. Of course, the Cedar Rapids Gazette is read here, the Sioux City Journal, Mason City Globe Gazette, Fort Dodge Messenger, Ames Tribune, Cedar Falls Waterloo Courier, and I'm going to miss somebody, but we do those smaller papers, and that happens from 8 to 9 every morning. And then Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil, that's the other one. And then at 9 o'clock every morning, we read the Des Moines Register live statewide from 9 until noon. And we rebroadcast that from 6 to 9 each night. So our volunteers, we don't read every single word. We don't read the ads. But we go through the front page. We do a little bit of audio description by describing what a picture or a cartoon or a map or graphic might look like. But our listeners are predominantly older. They're seniors, most of whom have experienced a vision loss later in life. They are the newspaper generation, while we are the 24/7 TV generation and now the internet news consumers. These folks got their news every morning from the paper. And so we are keeping them connected to their communities by providing equal access to that print information that the rest of us can see.
Well, and just chatting with you off the air, I can tell that this is a real community as well. I mean, you are connected personally to the people who use this service.
Yes. Archie, if you're still listening, we're having our big band bash party next month, and we'd like to see you there. Archie is one of our listeners. I believe Mike Glenn has come to one of our theater performances where we provide live audio description of the visual elements on stage for people. And then Kim, of course, with the Iowa Department for the Blind. It is a community.
In addition to giving people access to their local newspapers, which would be hard to get in other ways, although there have been technological advancements. I mean, people can get their computer to read things
sure.
out loud to them as well. But why do you think this is so important to your listeners?
I think, as Mr. Queen just mentioned, I think a lot of times it's a blow to hear that you're losing your vision, and there's a lot of fear there. I think gossip is universal, and I think news is kind of gossip. I mean, it is. Listen to what happened over there. What was that siren last night? You know, was there a car accident? Was there a bank robbery? I think information being passed back and forth, just like you guys do every day on Iowa Public Radio, is so important to remaining connected to the community, connected to the world. We serve about just over 3,500 listeners across the state. We send these radios out for free. So you call me, tell me your grandma needs an IRIS radio if she can't see it, but also if she can't hold it or understand it. We do a lot of dementia patients. We do a lot of people with Alzheimer's. Believe it or not, the human voice, just like you guys do on Iowa Public Radio, the human voice is extremely soothing and connecting. A lot of our listeners are rural. That's why we do super cheesy stuff, like we sing happy birthday every day. We have many, many listeners in their 90s, and they tell us that we are the only people who remembered their birthday. So we have listeners out in rural parts of the state who don't get a lot of visitors. They might live alone, and most of their support system and family has passed on. And so for us to run into the studio and sing happy birthday at 10 o'clock and remember them is a big deal. So we try to relieve the isolation that sometimes results from that fear from losing your vision.
Absolutely. And we, of course, in public radio, we deliver news all across the state of Iowa, but the local newspaper can deliver the local news in a way that you can't do on radio, you can't do on television. What are the most important parts of the paper to your listeners?
They want a quick scan of the front page, especially on those smaller papers. Again, we're talking about, I heard sirens last night. What was that about? Or, you know, it's the stuff that we get from our locals. It's the school board candidates and city council. It's stuff that's happening in your community. Statewide, the most important thing we do beyond the front page are the obituaries, because obituaries, funerals give every one of us a chance to participate in a social gathering of, you know, to show support or be mm-hmm. supported. So obituaries are huge. And then the third thing our listeners are extremely interested in are our grocery ads. We read every Wednesday, we fill an hour reading coupons. So we'll tell you that green beans are on sale at Hy-Vee, who sponsors the show, so I can say that. We'll tell you that green beans are on sale 3 for $1 at Hy-Vee, and that show's extremely popular because then people can make their own decisions
right.
about nutrition,
really
budget.
Use that information. Well, Mary Frances, thank you so much for talking with me today. Mary Frances Evans, Executive Director of the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service, better known as IRIS. And we have just a couple of minutes left. We have this email from Michael in Des Moines. He said, great points by your doctor. I discovered I had glaucoma 3 years ago when the eye doctor noticed my pressure was too high. I hadn't felt a thing. Tested for glaucoma, and it turns out I've lost peripheral on the left and right side of my left eye. I take eye drops daily, and there's been no progression in 3 years. Cataracts are incredibly easy to take care of. Had them in both eyes. It's less of a hassle than getting a tooth filled. But Dr. Bailey, what is your advice to people? I mean, clearly, in this case, Michael's vision was in serious danger. He hadn't felt anything. He hadn't really noticed anything. What can we do to protect ourselves from this kind of thing?
That's a great message and a happy story. And certainly getting a comprehensive eye exam is going to be a really important thing, and a healthy lifestyle. It's also such an important thing, you know, from listening to the interviews, that if you are told or you find out that you do have some type of permanent vision loss or vision loss that can't really be fixed, that's not the end. That's kind of the beginning. There's so many other options. But certainly starting out by getting in a comprehensive eye exam, if you haven't had one in a while, is a great place to start.
Well, and we mentioned cataract surgery and how that has just improved so dramatically in the past decades. Are you finding, as an ophthalmologist, are there a lot of technological advances in this field that allow you to do so much more for patients than you used to be able to do?
Well, it's really the measuring the eye for surgery has gotten so much better. And then the lens implants, you know, when we take out your cloudy lens, we replace it with a plastic lens that's clear and permanent. And we've been able to fine tune that to give people better vision. So a lot of people who've been wearing glasses since they were, you know, in seventh grade, now after cataract surgery, they might be able to go either without glasses or maybe just readers. We have new technology lenses that sometimes give you back that distance and near vision. It's not going to be like it was when you were 15, but it might be better than carrying around those cheaters in every
right.
pocket and every drawer. And so there's just a lot of great advances.
Well, I want to end with just a little bit of this email from Dan. He said, I've had diabetic retinopathy for 30 years. I was blessed to have a very skilled eye doctor in Milwaukee who was on the cutting edge of laser surgery to seal the blood vessels on the retina that were leaking. And we don't have time to share everything he says, but he's lived very well with this disease for a very long time. And he wants to end with this. Low vision does not have to make you into a recluse. With modern technology and the help of vision experts and others, you can remain very independent. Dan, thank you for that. And Dr. Bailey, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Jane Bailey is an ophthalmologist at the University of Iowa. We've been talking about vision loss and the conditions that can lead to vision loss this hour. Also, the services available for people who suffer from those conditions. Talk of Iowa is produced by Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a great day.